you've made it to the right spot if you're looking for tonight's Citizens Climate University. It's a weekly webinar program of Citizens Climate Lobbies that provides CCL supporters like you and I with access to in-depth training opportunities on topics related to climate change and effective climate advocacy. I'm your host, Brett Cease, and tonight's topic is part two of our November 2021 lobby training series. Specifically, we're going to be focused on supporting asks and how we can best strategically use them in our meetings heading on the Hill, starting with our lobby week in a couple of weeks. So with that, let me introduce a man who needs no introduction in these circles. Dr. Danny Richter joined CCL staff in 2013. You can hear all about his bio on last week's training, but I will just share that if you haven't already seen enough videos yet about COP26, Danny was featured actually in a wonderful episode on the road to Glasgow. It was episode 2, all about Leaders Summit on Climate. He happened to be in the same episode as Senator Whitehouse. And he starts here in the chat. I've just put a link. It's on EarthX TV. And he starts right about 8 minutes and 40 seconds in. So check that out if you are looking for a fun little window in outside of tonight about what we are talking about to the media and to other documentarians. But with that, Danny, I'll actually pass it to you and you can take it from here on learning goals and beyond. We're so glad all of you are here. And feel free again to start typing your questions into PollEV. The floor is yours, Danny.
Thanks, Brett. And thank you everybody for tuning in on a Thursday evening. So learning goals for today's presentation. Number one, I hope that you will, by the end of this presentation, we'll learn to identify the different moving parts of the current dynamic political setting, help you all understand CCL's three supporting asks this lobby week, and how they help us fulfill our role in the policy ecosystem. And third, reflect on where congressional staff are at this particular moment in time. This will help us connect in our lobby meetings. So those are the goals for today. We're going to try and achieve those goals with this outline. First, I'll do an introduction and a brief review of last week. Then we'll cover those supporting asks. Then we'll talk a little bit about connecting with Congress at this moment in time. We'll wrap it up with some conclusions and have plenty of time for Q&A and discussion. So let's start with that brief introduction or review. So where we are at right now, we're still talking about. We're still calling. So we launched a calling campaign, and we've already made 2,800 calls. So I want to thank everybody on this call who's made a call, and for especially if you ask friends or family to call here, because this is, we've been doing this a lot. We've been doing it for a long time. Reconciliation really has dragged on, hasn't it? But we launched this just this past Tuesday. Here you can see the URLs, and we are, I think we're doing great. This is really the last push before things really settle down in the Senate, as I'll talk about in a moment. That's where things still are really the most squishy. So let's actually move on to that introduction. So what we're talking about here is we're talking about reconciliation. We've been talking about this full year. Why are we talking about reconciliation? Because this is the opportunity for the Senate to pass big bills with a simple majority. They are circumscribed, but it's the simple majority as opposed to the filibuster-proof majority, which makes reconciliation so appealing. And there are a lot of moving parts right now. And so I want to just mention those briefly. We've got the bipartisan infrastructure framework. Speaker Pelosi was trying to pass that tonight. So when I checked the news just before, it hadn't yet passed. But this is something that has already passed the Senate. It is in the House, and this is the BIF, the bipartisan infrastructure framework. This is the $1 trillion package that progressives were refusing to pass until they had greater clarity on what would be in the Senate reconciliation bill. And so the bipartisan infrastructure pact framework already passed through the Senate, being held up in the House. And with that, there is a House reconciliation bill, and those two are tied. So that's the House. Then last Thursday, before my presentation last week, President Biden released a framework of his own, a Build Back Better framework. This was not really tied to anything necessarily, not directly to what was going on in Congress. So it's kind of hanging out there as its own framework. It did include a lot of spending. And so that was a lot of commitment to climate, which I think was encouraging to see that that had not been cut, as it was shrunk by a couple trillion dollars down to $1.875 trillion, but it still included $555 billion of investments in climate. So that was encouraging, although not enough to get us to 50% reduction. So I'll talk about that more in a minute. Then we have this Senate reconciliation framework. And this is the mystery. This is the really big piece. This is House Democrats want more clarity on this before they release the bipartisan infrastructure framework. And then looming all over all of this is the debt limit deadline, which was punted earlier this fall to December 3rd. So that is perhaps a cap. They could extend it again. They could raise the debt limit, but that is a really important deadline. December 3rd is the first day where the federal government might run out of money. It might be later than that, but that's the first day where they might run out of money. So this is, and then we default and then bad things happen. So here are the moving parts. I'll be referring to those throughout this. I do want to spend a little bit more time on Biden's framework because that was so new and I hadn't had a chance to digest it, much less talk about it. So this is the Build Back Better framework. As I mentioned, $550 billion in climate spending. This includes things like clean energy tax credits, civilian climate corps, addressing extreme weather and pollution in communities, and investments for clean energy technology. It also has government incentives to invest in next generation tech. It's all spending. So there's no carbon price in that. There's not even a methane fee, which is in the House reconciliation package. And models show it's not enough to reach 50% emissions reductions by 2030. So even though the administration and members of the administration have said that, the models don't back that up. Even though some environmental groups are saying that, the models don't back that up. So that is the Biden's framework doesn't get it to 50%. Negotiations for the Senate framework are still continuing, and let's talk more about the Senate as we continue to move through this. Last week, I covered our primary asks, and for Senate Democrats, the primary ask is to include a strong carbon price in reconciliation. This is both for Senate and House Democrats. And I made the point last week that if you know your Democrat is a strong champion for carbon price and reconciliation, say a Senator Whitehouse or Representative Deutsch, then you want to bring this in and have the conversation about, okay, how can we help? How can we help make this happen and have more of a strategic partnership? If your member is a co-sponsor of the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act, you cannot assume that they don't need to hear this message from you, because they may assume that you only want it in through regular order, and they may need a push to include a carbon price and reconciliation. So don't assume, confirm, and if you do confirm early, just have that positive discussion about what can we do to help. This is probably the last best chance. For Republicans, what I focused on last week was the supporting asks were going to be the primary asks. And we're revealing those supporting asks this night. For the Senate Republicans, we recommend the RISE Act or the FOREST Act. The supporting ask document is available on Community. And in the House, we're suggesting the Growing Climate Solutions Act. Now for Democrats, each of these can be used as a supporting ask. After you've had all the conversation about including a carbon price and reconciliation, these are good to go for that. For Republicans, these should be the primary ask. And why is that? It's because I think that for Republicans, just mentioning reconciliation, they could choose to shut down the meeting. They could choose to say, oh, it's such a partisan process. We don't want to talk about that. You guys are such a partisan organization. So instead of talking about reconciliation and exposing you and your team to that risk, just talk about these bipartisan bills that move the ball forward on climate. And so let's talk about those bills. Let's get into the supporting asks. So So just to refresh there, we pass supporting asks bills through three filters. And so number one is it bipartisan? That's the first thing we look at. We want to make sure that supporting asks are bipartisan. This is particularly important because we have engaged so heavily on the reconciliation process, which is being driven by Democrats. We want to make extra sure that our supporting asks are bipartisan. Needs to be complementary to the Energy Innovation and Carbon Dividend Act or a carbon price more generally in the context of reconciliation. And so if it's going to get out emissions that are already going to be substantively addressed by a carbon price, that brings it down a notch. And then achieve strategic goals. So what might examples be of strategic goals? Well, if the members supporting it are in a strategic position, they're a ranking member or a chairman of a particular committee that we need to pass a carbon price, or say looking at the organization as a whole and making sure that CCLers throughout the country have a hook. So the RISE Act, for example, has to do with coastal states. And so if you're in a coastal state, that's a good one to go to. Agriculture, the Growing Climate Solutions Act is really good for people with agriculture in their district. And the Forest Act, Republicans have been talking a lot about trees, and so that meets that strategic need. And again, generally, we are targeting our supporting us at Republicans this year. And so we're really thinking more than we usually do about Republicans with the supporting asks, because we want those to be the primary asks for Republicans this year. So now let's get into these supporting asks. The Growing Climate Solutions Act should be familiar at this point. This is, we've been advocating for this for well over a year. It's actually already passed the Senate 92-8 with Senator Braun and Senator Stabenow as the co-sponsors. And we put into the one pager for this. Each of these supporting asks have their own one pager, which is accessible through the hyperlinks embedded in the supporting ask document. Passed 92-8. I mean, that's incredible. I mean, right now on anything, for anything to pass 92-8 is really remarkable and stands out to the politicians are going to be talking to. And to really bring that forward for a bill that has the words climate solutions in the title is another example of something that was not supposed to be possible. I mean, the only of the eight senators who voted against this, it includes Josh Hawley, James Inhofe, Senator Lee out of Utah. It includes Bernie Sanders. It includes Elizabeth Warren. It includes Jeff Merkley, Markey, and it includes Cory Booker. So you have the far left and the far right of the respective parties. I mean, that's really incredible to get this level of agreement on a bill. So really that's something to highlight for the House members. Because it's already passed the Senate, you definitely do not want to bring this up to Senate Republicans because they've already voted on this. The only way you would want to bring this up would be as an appreciation. And CCL's role in this, just so you know, we've been, as I said, we've been pushing this for quite some time. From when it was first introduced, we pushed for it before it was reintroduced and racked up 54 co-sponsors. And then one of my favorite anecdotes is the Stabenow office, they were referring reporters to groups. CCL was one of the two groups that she referred this reporter to, and the other as a group to talk to about supporting for this, and the other was Ben and Jerry's ice cream. I like that because I think it shows that we were really pivotal in the minds of one of the sponsoring offices to moving this bill forward. So we have a lot of ownership over pushing this forward. Had a chance to speak with Senator Braun about this recently. He remains very engaged, very excited, was willing to whip Republicans in the House to try and get this over the line. So, I mean, that's the kind of engagement we want to see. So again, the House has not voted on this. The sponsors in the House are Representative Spanberger and Representative Bacon. And we would love to get this over the line. We've been told that this has a chance at getting its own standalone vote, which again is a remarkable thing for a bill that has climate solutions in the title. thinking about what the Growing Climate Solutions Act does. Here's the one pager for this. What is its strategic significance? Well, we really need to get farmers on side with climate solutions. It's not just about the potential to sequester carbon through regenerative agriculture that I know a lot of CCLers are very excited about, that we're hearing more and more about these days. It's about the raw politics of it. If farmers aren't on side, it's really hard to get anything done in the Senate. And so getting farmers on side, having experience of being a part of the solution is the real significance. It's less about the emissions reductions it would achieve. It's much more in my mind about getting farmers on side saying, I am a part of the solution here. And what it does, it establishes a greenhouse gas technical assistance provider and third-party verifier certification program for those farmers, establishes a USDA certification for the sequestration, agriculture sequestration of CO2. It organizes an advisory council and USDA reports to assess progress in carbon markets. And just generally what it's doing is it's lowering the barriers of entry to pre-existing carbon markets for farmers. So just helping them get through the red tape here. And again, this is for House Republicans only. The only time you should be bringing this up in the Senate is as an appreciation for if they voted for it. Now let's look at the other next one. This is new, the Reinvesting in Shoreline Economies and Ecosystems Act, or RISE Act. This one so far has only been introduced in the Senate, and you can see that in the view here of the one pager for this. It's only got a Senate bill number up there. The strategic significance here is that it's really good for coastal states. And so if you have a coastal Republican in the Senate, this is a great bill to invite them to co-sponsor. And when we look at what is in this bill, here are some of the major provisions, what this bill does. It creates a funding streams for coastal infrastructure and resilience efforts for vulnerable communities threatened by sea level rise and coastal erosion. The way it does this is through a new revenue sharing model for federal offshore wind revenue with states. So it really shares a lot more of those revenues with states, giving them more of a financial incentive to get offshore wind. So it's using money to advance a partnership. And it does this by amending the Gulf of Mexico Energy Security Act, or Go Mesa. So this is a pre-existing bill, and it amends that, and that's how it achieves these goals. And again, this is a recommended primary ask for Senate Republicans. Now let's look at the Forest Act, the Fostering Overseas Rule of Law and Environmentally Sound Trade Act. Here's the one pager for this. This is in both the House and the Senate. So this is a recommended primary ask for Senate Republicans, but this could also be a good supporting ask for House Republicans. And the strategic significance here is Republicans have had a lot of enthusiasm for planting trees in the last couple of years. This really began with the Trillion Trees Act. Representative Westerman moved that last Congress, and this was really a frontline Republican talking point. Well, this is a bipartisan bill. It has Representative Fitzpatrick on it in the House version. And this goes, I think, further. It's a little bit more key. And what it would do, it increases reporting transparency for international supply chains for goods produced from illegally deforested lands. So this is about cracking down on illegal deforestation. And it is also providing assistance to reduce illegal deforestation in countries where that is a problem. And it adds deforestation included as a U.S. financial crime criterion. So really, like I said, has some teeth here. And it creates a purchasing preference for deforestation-free products. So this is a pretty cool bill that taps into Republican enthusiasm in Trillion Trees. I think takes it to the next level. It also, I think another way you could bring this forward with Republicans is because it does have that increased transparency and involves greater accountability from other countries, I do think that that has appeal for Republicans. Enforcing good behavior on other countries, I think, is a good line for this. And this is a recommended primary ask for Senate Republicans. I do want to address the supporting asks that were not covered. There was actually quite a bit of turnover, even from June. And I want to cover those bills that were supporting asks in the past and why they're not a supporting ask now. Bottom line, a lot of them are going to be incorporated in the moving parts I spoke about earlier. And so let's just walk down the line. The Energy Sector Innovation Credit Act. This is really duplicative with the Clean Energy for America Act. This is they're both having to do with tax credits. The Clean Energy for America Act is the bill that Senator Ron Wyden has championed. He's the lead sponsor on that. He's also the chairman of the Finance Committee. And so he's going to get his way. And so no need to support something when there's something that largely replicates what it would achieve. And it's a lock. If anything gets passed, they'll have tax credits. The SCALE Act, which had to do with carbon capture and sequestration infrastructure, that was included in the bipartisan infrastructure package, which again has passed the Senate and could pass the House as early as tonight. I don't know if it's passed yet because I'm speaking with all of you, but because this is included in something we expect to pass, no need to lobby for it. Next on the list, we have the Hope for Homes Act. This was so far the lone exception where we actually did support it was not a bipartisan bill. And the reason for this, that third consideration, the strategic significance, we were keeping our ears to the ground, talking to a lot of you who have progressive members. And the sentiment was we needed a way to connect with progressive members. And so we had Hope for Homes as a bill to appeal to progressive members. But the provisions of Hope for Homes have largely been included in reconciliation. And since we do really need to talk to progressives about a carbon price and reconciliation, that should be the primary ask. That should be where your conversation is focused. So Hope for Homes is not a supporting ask this time around. And Reclaim, the coalition that is behind this, so we are in conversations with a number of other groups, and they are not pursuing it as a standalone bill at this time. And so if they don't want to pursue it as a standalone bill, it's probably counterproductive for us to pursue something that other groups are not pursuing. They're thinking about taking the major components of it and perhaps trying to incorporate it into other legislation. But until there's clarity on that, it doesn't make sense to pursue this without the rest of the coalition. So we remain interested in Reclaim and the provisions in there, but playing ball with other groups who are invested in this, we are not pushing this as a supporting ask at this time. Don't think it makes sense. So now let's talk about connecting with Congress in this moment, because what a moment we are in. All of us are feeling this. We all follow the news. This is a very confusing and fast-moving process driven by congressional leadership. And so now let's put ourselves into the shoes of the staffers and the members we're going to be meeting with. If it's driven by congressional leadership, that means that many members themselves, as well as their staff, have been in the dark throughout this process. And imagine how frustrating that would be as a member of Congress when you don't actually know where this train is headed or why. And at the same time, as you don't know, you're accountable for responding to constituents, listening to their concerns, and you have to make decisions about a process that you don't have full vision on. And so there's a real thing about reconciliation fatigue, because this has been going on so long. This dynamic has become more acute recently, but it's been going on for a long time. It's just we think we're close, and then nope, the progressives can't reach a deal with the moderates in the House, and Joe Manchin said something, and so the world is blowing up. And so we gotta punt another month and keep up this process, this leadership-driven process where we don't know, but we're members of Congress, so people expect us to know. So there is this real fatigue on the Hill. And moving on to the last point here, think about how tired you've been from all this process and following the news stories, and just imagine how tired and how exhausted staff must be from this. And I think that if you were able to put yourself, go through this visioning process, I think you'll be better able to connect with the staff and members that you're meeting with. So this applies to everybody I'm about to talk about. Now let's talk about different offices. So let's start with House Democrats. What is their reality? They are under enormous pressure to approve whatever comes out of the Senate. And so I think that possibly as early as tonight, it will move fully into the Senate. But I mean, that's kind of a bummer where you're the junior partner here. The Senate is the one who's really driving this. And you're going to have to vote on this. And you know the Senate's going to vote on this. And you're just going to have to vote on whatever the Senate says. That's very disempowering. And so that's part of the dynamic that's going on with the House. They're a little bit bummed. Our goal as our volunteers, your goal is to help diffuse any opposition the House might have on the basis of the carbon fee. It might be that our blood pressure goes up again after we see the Senate bill, it goes to the House and they find something, that, whether it's moderates or whether it's progressives, that they don't like so much, and they are crying foul. We want to make sure our goal with House Democrats is to make sure that the thing they cry foul on is not the carbon fee, should it make it into the Senate version. So that's our goal. Now let's move on to the next group. For House Republicans, I think the thing that I'm focusing on here is I'm remembering the Conservative Climate Caucus and how that got up to 68 members, flabbergasting everybody, including the chairman of that caucus, John Curtis. It really shot up there. And I want to share this quote from John Curtis. This is from an article just, I think it was last week. Time is still doing strange things for me. But he is leaving today to attend the Glasgow Climate Conference. Here's this quote. "We also want to show that we have good ideas. We want a seat at that climate table. That's been the mistake with the Republicans not talking about this. Our ideas are not being considered." I think this is great. The way I'm thinking about this is these 68 Republicans are walking in the right direction. And I think it's much easier to get somebody to walk faster who's walking in the right direction than it is to turn somebody around. And so I think about all the work that we put into getting that Republican climate resolution, the Gibson resolution in 2015, just 17 Republicans to say climate change is real, humans have had an impact and Congress should do something about it. And I compare that with this statement, the leader of 68 Republicans saying, we have good ideas and we want to talk to the world about that. It's just so different. And so our goal with House Republicans, there are still House Republicans whom we need to turn around to get to walk in the other direction. For those 68 plus Republicans who are walking in the right direction, let's get them to move faster. Let's get them to walk in the right direction quicker and get to where we all need to be sooner than we otherwise would have. That's our goal with House Republicans. Moving on to the Senate, for Senate Democrats, they are now working on their version of the framework. They are trying to iron out the details before that December 3rd deadline. And the reason we haven't seen any details on this framework months after we first expected them is because they're trying to pursue a high degree of consensus. Whatever they put out, they want to make sure they have the votes to pass. And so that's why this is such a frustrating process for everybody on the outside. They're calculating that by keeping all those conversations internal, they can actually get to those 50 votes. And so that's the context in which we're working. We are trying to influence a very opaque process. And we are trying to, with our lobby day, trying to increase this ambition for a carbon price in reconciliation. I think we hit the sweet spot with our calling campaign. I think that was perfectly timed. But here we're giving it one more shot. We got the calling campaign this week. We've got the lobby week coming up. And this is really the last opportunity. And remember, they're working very hard to meet this deadline. They have exhausted staff. And because I know you are all wondering about Manchin, I want to share a quote from Manchin. On Monday, he said he wanted to slow down the process. And then Tuesday, there was this quote in CNN, which I think provides clarity to that. Even I was a little bit thrown by that quote. But here's this quote. "We have all next week. We're going to work it into next week as they are working. So if everyone works real hard, I've said, we can get it done before Thanksgiving. We're going to get something done." And so that's this week from Joe Manchin. And I think that that's, I think that's encouraging. He wants to play ball that Thanksgiving deadline. I think that's for the framework, not necessarily for the bill. So I don't think things are going to be passed. I'm not sure how they're going to handle that limit. So I think we finally get to see a Senate framework around Thanksgiving, if everybody works real hard, and we'll see what happens. So this is, it's not too late for our lobby day. Our lobby day is coming right before this deadline. So that's the latest from Joe Manchin. For Senate Republicans, they're generally frustrated about the being left out of the decision-making. This is also true for House Republicans. But just as I focused on the Conservative Climate Caucus in the House, in the Senate, I'm really thinking about the Climate Solutions Caucus. And the Climate Solutions Caucus has continued to meet throughout this process. We can get that next bullet point, please. They were quiet for quite a long time. And I think of, and I know that Representative Curtis also thinks of the Climate Solutions Caucus as being further forward. It's a step beyond the Conservative Climate Caucus because it is a bipartisan conversation. And just an update on the caucus, we hadn't heard anything from the Senate in quite a long time. They issued a press release last week, which is working on response after extreme weather events. But really, basically, since June, when they issued a press release about the Growing Climate Solutions Act, we hadn't heard anything from them. And then their previous meeting that they publicized was in March. So Senate Republicans, it's the same concept of you have senators who are moving in the right direction. We're trying to get them to walk faster. There are still senators who we need to turn around, and that's harder. But we're still doing that work. Okay. So just to bring it all together, what we're looking at here, lots of moving pieces. We've got the House reconciliation package. We have the Senate reconciliation framework, which you haven't seen. We have the Biden framework as of last week. We have the bipartisan infrastructure framework package, which has already passed the Senate, not the House. And we have this December 3rd debt ceiling. It's difficult for everyone to keep these straight because they all interweave in different ways and it changes through time. And it's confusing even for Senate staff. So you find yourself confused, don't worry. Senate staff have been confused by this as well. Do your best. Just remember, these are the different components. Also, our supporting asks, growing climate solutions. And for House Republicans, we recommend this as the primary ask. For the RISE Act, that's good for Senate Republicans to be the primary ask, especially if you're in a coastal state. And the Forest Act for Senate Republicans, you can use these as supporting asks for Democrats. For Republicans, please make these the primary ask. Please avoid reconciliation discussions in Republican offices. And I would go so far as to say, if they bring it up, try and divert the conversation away from reconciliation and towards what you're actually there to talk about, these asks, because if they try and insert it, it could just be a way to try and blow up the conversation. So really, please try and avoid reconciliation with Republican offices this time around. Success this year depends on remembering the very different headspace between Democrats who are thinking only about reconciliation and Republicans who are excluded from that process and perhaps not very happy about that. We all need to be flexible and adaptable. So as I said, there's a big vote happening on the bipartisan infrastructure framework and the House reconciliation package possibly right now, and I don't know what the outcome of that is. That may change the calculus in the next couple of weeks. So we need to be extra flexible and adaptable. And remember, members and staff are really tired too. They have reconciliation fatigue, and they've been confused in the dark. And I think that will help us connect this lobby day.
Again, as a reminder, outside of community, we're also going to post this on YouTube. And so there's a link to that and the forums as well in the chat. At this point, Danny, I'll pass it back to you. Any closing words?
Thank you all for everything you do. As Brett said, it is a team effort, and we've got a great team. So wishing the best of luck, especially in this very strange time, and we'll see what we can accomplish here.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Citizens Climate Lobby's training program. You can tune into more episodes anywhere podcasts are available. Inspired by what you heard today? Join Citizens Climate Lobby to advocate for bipartisan climate solutions. Go to community.citizensclimate.org to find more trainings, resources, your local chapter, national action teams, discussion forums, and more. Be sure to like our Facebook page and follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Citizens Climate. We also invite all of our listeners to subscribe to our YouTube channel for more inspiration. And together, we are creating the political will for a livable world.